Former Yankees first baseman Lou Gehrig is probably best remembered for one moment. It was July 4th, 1939, soon after the 36-year-old was diagnosed with ALS. On that day, 62,000 fans watched as Gehrig walked to home plate at Yankee Stadium, scratched his head, and said goodbye to the game of baseball.
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face, of the earth.
He died less than 2 years later. But a recent discovery gives fans the opportunity to remember Gehrig for more than just the sad end of his legendary career. Only a Game's Gary Wallach has the story.
2 years ago, historian and writer Alan Gaff was researching World War I. He stumbled upon something unexpected.
I was looking around in the Oakland papers and happened upon Lou Gehrig's columns.
Gehrig, it turns out, wrote a series of newspaper columns that ran in Oakland, Ottawa, and Pittsburgh during the New York Yankees' 1927 season.
And when I read the first one, it's like, wow, I don't remember ever seeing any reference to this before.
Gaff searched the internet for any mention of them by historians or anyone else.
And there was nothing. There's very few people alive now who would have even read them when they were in a newspaper. So historians have just kind of overlooked it. It's like, this is too good to be true. This just can't be happening.
Gaff learned that in 1927, sports agent Christy Walsh arranged for his young client to join other baseball luminaries in writing a series of newspaper columns.
So it was an opportunity for ball fans to learn something new about this new phenomenal kid who was only 24 in 1927, and he could explain how he rose to such prominence in his own words. It was a rags-to-riches story that Christy Walsh thought the country would love to hear.
In one of his first columns, Gehrig wrote about his relationship with his mother, Christina,
who he refers to as his best pal. There's only one mention of his father.
Heinrich Gehrig suffered from alcoholism and epilepsy, and he struggled to find work.
But there are numerous mentions of his mother and the relationship that they had. He was the only surviving child of four, so his mother doted on him his entire life.
And Lou doted on his mom in return. In 1923, he was a student and baseball player at Columbia University.
Gehrig had originally planned on finishing his college degree and going into some field of engineering because at that time he was essentially the sole support of his family.
In 1923, his mother was ill with pneumonia. In a column dated August 22, 1927, Gehrig recalls how he changed his plan and decided to sign with the New York Yankees.
I'll never forget the night I went home and told my mother that I was going to quit college and go into baseball.
This is an actor reading Gehrig's words.
She broke down and cried when I told her. She insisted that I should stay on in school.
An engineering career seemed a safer long-term bet than pro ball did. But Gehrig wanted the immediate bonus that signing with the Yankees would provide.
I'll be well again soon, she said, and then everything will be all right. Like me, she didn't think I could make good in baseball. And she was afraid that I would be let out in a few weeks, and then I'd be out of college as well as out of a job, too. It was a tough spot.
To the benefit of baseball, Gehrig signed with the Yankees for the annual salary of $2,400 and a bonus of $1,500.
Which, by the way, is now worth less than $23,000 in today's money. But it was too good a deal to pass up. And his long-term plan was to play baseball for a few years, save enough money to support his family until he got established in a lucrative career in private life.
At first, that decision must have seemed like a bad one. Gehrig played only sparingly during the 1923 and 1924 seasons. Gehrig began to hit in 1925, but the Yankees' first baseman struggled defensively and on the base paths. Gehrig didn't hear the end of it from opponent Ty Cobb, the Detroit Tigers' notoriously confrontational star player manager. In one column, Gehrig wrote about the abuse Cobb directed at him as he struggled to establish himself.
"You think you're a ball player," he said one day at the stadium. "All you can do is hit that ball. If you're a ball player, I'm the king of Siam." And he said it in a nasty tone of voice. Once in 1925, when I was getting in the game only now and then, I went to Huggins and asked him to get waivers on me and send me to the minors where I could play regularly. Cobb, then Detroit's manager, apparently heard about it. For the next time I saw him, he came over where I was. "So, you want to go to the minors, do you?" he opened up. "Say, listen, rookie, you'll never get away from me. I'll claim you, and when I get you, I'll send you to China, where it'll take the rest of your life to get back."
Gaff says Gehrig didn't hold that against Cobb.
"Because months later, they would joke about it and get along as if they'd been fast friends for years."
In fact, as Gehrig wrote in one 1927 column,
"Cobb is one of my best boosters today. When I finally got a job as a regular, he was one of the first men in the league to congratulate me. And many times he has gone out of his way to show me little tricks in hitting and in base running, tricks that only Cobb can show."
Gehrig also told stories about the legendary Babe Ruth, who had been his mentor.
"At one point, even offering Lou financial guidance in the dugout, on one occasion, he was telling Lou, you know, I've made a fool of myself, I've spent all my money, and you should plan for the future, invest your money. And during this entire conversation, everybody on the Yankee team was just bent over double because up to that point, Babe Ruth had squandered every cent he had ever made."
That season, Ruth and Gehrig were locked for a time in a tight battle for the home run title. Stories circulated about alleged acrimony between the two, but Gehrig publicly professed his admiration for the Babe. He shared the following story on September 21st, 1927.
"Up at Toronto in an exhibition game a couple of years ago, the kids mobbed the field as the game ended. There must have been 1,000 of them, and they all made a beeline for Babe. They struck him like a huge wave, and he went down, flat on his face, literally buried under a landslide of kids. It looked as though he must be trampled to death, and players and cops formed a flying wedge to rescue him. But before we got there, he emerged, smiling. Two or three youngsters clinging to his broad back, others hanging on his legs, and one under each arm. Most players would have been angered and disgusted. But the Babe was smiling as he trotted to the runway, and still smiling when he disappeared under the stands. As he started down in the dugout, he happened to look back. One little youngster was still standing over by first base, crying. Babe turned back through the mob again and went to the kid. 'What's the matter, kid?' he asked. 'I got my hand stepped on,' the little fellow whimpered. 'It hurts.' 'That's all right,' Babe replied, taking the lad in his arms. 'We'll get that fixed.' And back he plowed through the mob, the youngster held in his arms. 'Look out, here comes the ambulance,' he called. Then he took the lad into the clubhouse, and Babe bandaged the sore finger himself. After that, he gave the lad a baseball, a pat on the back, and sent him away smiling. That's typical of the Babe."
Gehrig was also friendly with Tris Speaker and Walter Johnson. In describing his relationship with the contemporary greats, Gehrig always seemed awestruck. His humility often bordered on inferiority complex. Odd for a guy with movie star looks and who batted cleanup on the team many considered to be the greatest ever. In 1927, Gehrig led the league in doubles, RBI, and total bases. The Yankees went 110-44, won the American League by 19 games, and swept Pittsburgh in the World Series. Gehrig was the MVP. And yet, in his columns about that season,
"He never thought of himself as more than just a cog in a team. He was quite content to give credit to other people when he deserved more than he was even getting in the press."
Some feel that Gehrig, like Babe Ruth and other ballplayers who wrote newspaper columns at the time, had a ghostwriter. But Alan Gaff disagrees.
"There are stories there that other people wouldn't have put in, you know, self-deprecating stories about himself.
After Gaff stumbled upon Gehrig's columns 2 years ago, he found a willing publisher right away. He presented Gehrig's writing as chapters in a book, not as newspaper columns.
But the words are all his.
And they flow as if the reader is sitting at the Gehrig family table, eating his mom's German pancakes, listening to Lou speak candidly, telling stories long forgotten.
It's a unique insight into one of baseball's greatest players.
After that 1927 season, Lou Gehrig never wrote another newspaper column. He played another 12 seasons, helping the Yankees win 5 more World Series and himself to 1 more MVP in 1936. He set a consecutive games played record that stood for 56 years. Just a handful of games into the 1939 season, the disease that would bear his name ended his baseball career. Lou Gehrig died in 1941 at the age of 37. In one of Gehrig's last columns from 1927, he looks back at the Yankees' championship season. And then, in what can now be described as a poignant foreshadowing, he looks ahead.
Of course, I am just a kid at the game, and I realize it. I still have much to learn, and I hope I still have many years in which to learn it. As for the years that lie ahead, I can only hope for the best.
That story came from Only a Game's Gary Wallach. Alan Gaff's book is titled Lou Gehrig, The Lost Memoir. Excerpts from Gehrig's columns were read by Brendan Connors.